I got to know, how many people sitting here today have at least one picture of Jesus somewhere in their house? They're everywhere. And when I ask you, where did that image come from, hopefully you don't think Walmart. Or maybe that's where you got it from. But really, where did they come from? You might be a little surprised that that picture that you hold so near and dear, what its origin is. Now, I'd like to tell you, National Geographic stole my idea. I was going through the food line the other day, and as I was checking out, there sat a National Geographic magazine that said, a photo depiction of Jesus, where did the image come from? I'd like to let you know, they stole the idea from me, not the other way around. I was here first, all right? So where did they come from? Well, the early images of Jesus are thought to be based off of Apollos, the Roman sun god. They depict Jesus as young, probably somewhere in his 20s, no beard, and very physically fit. This is the Good Shepherd image, and it is the oldest known image of Jesus found. It was painted in the third century, and depicts Jesus, again, younger and more fit, and no beard. And this was actually taken from the walls of the catacombs in Rome. Now, when you start thinking about pictures of Jesus, remember, the early church, the first century church, the church that we saw in Acts chapter 2, they were Jewish. Therefore, they had laws against making images of God. And they thought Jesus was God. Therefore, the early church would have actually looked at making an image of Jesus as sinful. So you don't have any of these really early images from the early church. As a matter of fact, it was not until our very good friend Constantine legalized Christianity that the image of Jesus began to morph into the more modern image that you probably have in your house somewhere today. At that point, Jesus was aged up to a man in his 30s. After all, that's when his ministry started, right? Age of 30. And well, that beard that we are so used to seeing, the beard was added more because all the other main gods in the Roman Greek history and their culture, they had beards. Zeus and Neptune and Poseidon and all of those gods, they had beards. So since he's God, we have to give him a beard also. He was slimmed down during Constantine's time. After all, he was of modest origin, so he couldn't go around looking all buff, so they kind of made him slim down just a little bit. And believe it or not, most of your modern day images that you have of Jesus is totally based off of this particular image. And well, this particular image was painted in the 6th century, 500 years after Jesus left the planet. It comes from St. Catherine's Monastery at Mount Sinai. And this is the model image that all of the other images, and you can see it there, all of the other images that we have of Jesus were based off of this one. And this one was painted 500 years after he left. So trust me, Jesus didn't sit down for the portrait, okay? They were taking it from all of the other things that they had built this image of Jesus around. In the 8th and 9th century, controversy rose and centered around whether it was okay to make images of religious persons. So you know what they decided to do? They destroyed them. And then the image of Jesus Christ came under scrutiny. And so they began actually destroying a lot of those early paintings that they had of Jesus. So the only ones that are really left, unless you go digging in the catacombs, the only ones that you have left are the ones that, again, are based off of that one picture. That is where we get the consolidated image of Jesus. During the 11th century, the Byzantine Empire fell, and by that time, the Roman Empire was but a distant memory. And well, at that point, there were many images of Jesus that were painted, all based off of the picture that I showed you from the monastery. So today when you go home and you find your picture of Jesus, and you're just like, ah, so that's what he looked like. Not a chance. Okay? That image was created by humanity. Now again, I'm not saying that having a picture of Jesus is wrong. I'm not going there. But you need to understand, it is not exactly probably how Jesus looked when he walked this planet. You really want a better picture of Jesus? Well, you got to go over to Revelation chapter 1, verses 1 through 18. Now, I know, we finished this last week. I keep telling myself that. Last week was Easter. When you build a sermon series have a flow. And so, we finished last week, but I owe you guys a makeup session from the week that I was sick. And so, here it is. And so, these are the verses that we have spent the last 5 weeks studying. I turned around to see a voice that was speaking to me. And when I turned, I saw seven gold lampstands, and among the lampstands was someone like the Son of Man, dressed in a robe, reaching down to his feet, and with a golden sash around his chest. The hair on his head was white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were like blazing fire. His feet were like bronze glowing in the furnace, and his voice was like the sound of a rushing water. In his right hand he held seven stars, and coming out of his mouth was a sharp double-edged sword. His face was like the sun of shining, like the sun shining in all its brilliance. When I saw him, I fell at his feet as though dead. Then he placed his right hand on me and said, "Do not be afraid. I am the first and the last. I am the living one. I was dead. Now look, I am alive forever and ever. And I hold the keys of death and Hades." Now again, if you go out on Google and you go to the images section, and you type in Jesus Revelation, you're going to get a myriad of pictures of people that are trying to depict how this particular picture translates. We can't help ourselves. This is one of them that you found there, that you find out there. And even in that translation, do y'all kind of see the picture that we've gotten ourselves used to over the years? They just kind of aged him up a little bit, right? And made him look, but they still start with that basic picture that we are used to seeing. And so I don't think what John saw was ever supposed to be a literal image of Jesus. Like most of Revelation, it is dripping in symbolism. Some of the symbolism connects to the letters in the seven churches. All of the imagery connects to who Jesus really is. And well, in going back in our scriptures, and going back into our point and filling in the hole in our little sermon series, today we are going to take a look at verse 14. The hair on his head was like white like wool, as white as snow, and his eyes were like blazing fire. And we are going to start with his idea of his hair. Well, hair is an interesting thing to talk about. I don't talk about mine too much because it's abandoning ship. You know, if you don't want to stick with me, I got no room for you. You know, so we don't worry about that too much. But hair is one of those things that when we think about Jesus, it's something we think about, right? And the first thing I want you to see is it does not discuss the length of Jesus' hair. It doesn't say, oh yeah, it was about shoulder length, or it didn't touch the collar because that would make it too long. So there was no discussion about the length of the hair that John saw. But there was also a comparison made to wool, but it wasn't to the texture of wool. Okay, John didn't go out there and take his hair and say, let me see the white hair of Jesus. He didn't like give Jesus, you know, rub his head and say, wow, that looks a little different. We're not talking about a texture here. There actually are some contemporaries out there that write, and they've written whole big theses on why it felt like wool. He didn't touch it, okay? He just, when he looked at it, he said, that looks like wool. And what he's after the color. When John saw Jesus in Revelation, his hair was white. Now, that brings up some interesting facts about who Jesus really is, and we have to start in Daniel chapter 7, verse 9. It says, and now look, thrones were set in place, and the ancients of days took his seat. His clothing was white as snow, and his hair on his head was white like wool. His throne was flaming with fire, and the white hair and the white hair and his wheels were all ablaze. So this is Daniel's vision when he goes into the throne room. And remember, Daniel had never seen Jesus. And at this point, Daniel didn't think he was looking at Jesus. Who did Daniel think he was looking at? This was his glimpse of God. And that immediately gets my wheels to turn a little bit, because when we see what John is seeing and we see what Daniel is seeing, you get like father, like son. John chapter 14, verse 9. Jesus answered, "Don't you know, Philip, even after I have been among you for such a long time, anyone who has seen me," there you go, "has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'?" As I begin to look at pictures of my dad, you know what I'm figuring out? I look a lot like my dad. We had an event a few years ago. We were down there digging through some old pictures with my mom, and they pulled out a picture, and when Benjamin saw it, he's like, "I don't ever remember sitting on Santa's lap with that picture." And mom's like, "Well, that's not you. That's your dad." So even though, okay, Benjamin's now tall and lanky and doesn't look very much like me anymore, because I'm like fireplug size here. All right? But you understand, when we see Jesus, we've seen God. When you see who Jesus really is, he is God. And well, Jesus and the Father, they're the same person. Now, again, we've talked about this. That blows my mind. But Jesus tells us in John chapter 10, verse 30, very short verse, I and the Father are one. So when you see Jesus, you see God. And when we saw the image in Revelation, we see the same thing that Daniel sees. And so you understand, you are actually looking at God. The description is there. But what about the white? What does it tell us about Jesus, the fact that he had white hair? Well, there are three important things when you go back and you look at symbolism and you look at the Old Testament and the New Testament. There are three things that are associated with the color white. And the first thing that's associated there is white is a symbol of holiness. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to the entire assembly of Israel and say to them, 'Be holy because I, the Lord your God, am holy.'" So what does holy mean? Well, usually we don't get the definition right, because holy means apartness or separate. When Moses arrived at the burning bush, God told him, "Take off your sandals. This is a holy place." The center of the temple was considered the Holy of Holies. It was a holy place. Both were holy not because of their location, but because they were in the presence of God. In Leviticus chapter 20, verse 26, God set apart the nation of Israel, telling them to be holy. "You are to be holy to me. You are to be holy to me because I, the Lord, am holy. I have set you apart from the nations to be my own." And you know what? Not surprisingly, in 1 Peter, when we get to the church gets the exact same command. "But just as he who called you holy, so be holy in all that you do, for it is written, 'Be holy because I am holy.'" So when John saw Jesus and he saw that white hair, immediately what John is thinking, this is not the Jesus that I am thinking about. Whoa, this is a much different picture. I'm staring in the face of God. And he is holy. And not only is he holy, white is a symbol for purity. John specifically compares the hair to white snow. And when it snows around here, it covers everything. Now, fortunately, it doesn't do it that often. But when it does snow, I've got a picture when it snowed this year. And when I went outside, you have to take a picture because you just don't see it that often around here. And when I stepped out on my porch and I looked out across, you could not tell where my yard ended and the street began, and where the street ended and the next yard across the street began, because the snow covered everything and it was a blanket of snow. The thing is that when you go out and the sun is out, it's difficult to look at this new snow because, well, it reflects the light. But that snow, she ain't so pretty a few weeks or a few days after it's been out there, right? the plows have come through and they've pushed it and it's got all the black ookie in it and the dogs come out and made the track through it and the people have come out and made their tracks through it and the kids begin to sleigh ride and they smoosh it down so it melts. And so it gets to look kind of nasty and dirty after a few days. So we go from the pure to the nasty. Well, you understand that Jesus was the pure because Jesus didn't have any blemishes. He didn't have any tracks. Jesus lived a perfectly sinless life. But you know that he appeared so that he might take away our sin, and in him is no sin. Now, again, my head doesn't wrap that way. If I can go a half a day without sinning, I'm doing really good. I've had a really good day. Right? I don't get that. But Jesus went all the way through his life, and never once did he commit a sin. Because Jesus was like that white snow. He was pure. So not only was he holy, not only was he pure. Okay, a lot of people are going to like this next one here, because guess what? White is supposed to be a symbol of wisdom. That's what white hair is supposed to mean. It is because of him you are in Christ, who has become for us wisdom from God. That is our righteousness, holy and redemption. Holiness and redemption. So here's the way it's supposed to work. White hair usually comes with age. Right? You just don't see very many babies that walk around with a head of white hair. All right? And supposedly, so they tell me, that with age comes wisdom. So supposedly, the longer you live on this planet, the more wise you're supposed to be. So last night I was doing the trim, and I don't have much up here, and there isn't a lot of gray up here, but I was doing the trim, and I started to trim up the beard, and I'm noticing there's starting to get some gray in the beard. So I'm thinking, maybe it's time to shave it all off, you know, hide it up a little bit, you know. But does that mean I'm getting wise? My family's thinking, I sure hope so, you know. Age is supposed to bring wisdom to us. So when John saw Jesus, he did not see the man that left the planet 33 years ago. So he didn't see Jesus, 33 years old, got a lot to learn, a lot to live. What he saw was the individual that was about to allow John to see behind the curtain. Wow. So John saw not the 33-year-old, got some growing to do, Jesus. He saw the fully matured, white hair, all wise Jesus. Now, I would like to tell you that white hair is supposed to bring wisdom. I'll have to let y'all decide whether if you have white hair, if you obtained wisdom yet or not. But that's what it's supposed to bring. But let's talk about the second characteristic, because he's going to let John see behind the curtain. And the first thing that John's going to take a look at is those eyes. It says his eyes were like blazing fire. So this is kind of different from what I see when I have that picture of Jesus, because when I see that picture of Jesus, the one that the artists draw, the eyes are always drawn very soft, okay? They have a very soft complexion to them, and that was done on purpose because, believe it or not, this was taken actually from the Bible, where there are verses that they say he looked at humanity with great compassion. When Jesus landed and saw the large crowd, he had a compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things, and well, not this picture. When John sees Jesus, he does not see eyes of compassion. He says, I see eyes of fire. Daniel chapter 10, verses 5 through 6. I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen with a belt of fine gold from Euphrates around his waist. His body was like topaz, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches. His arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze. And his voice sounds like the sound of a multitude. So we stopped in Daniel last fall, and I read these verses, and I kind of did a little Texas two-step, and I stepped right over, who do you really think this messenger is? And the reason is because there's a lot of debate. There are actually those out there that look at this image and they look at the other visions of Daniel and they look at the visions of John in Revelation and they say this is a Old Testament viewing of the person of Jesus. And the description really does fit. Of course, there are some that say he's just another messenger. And again, I'm not here to get into the debate, but I stop here because I like the way that they talk about the eyes here. You see, John says blazing fire. Daniel said flaming torches. Now, when I see blazing eyes, I think of like something maybe bright red like we see on the screen. But Daniel is saying these are torches. And I like that idea because torches are lit for a purpose, right? They're supposed to produce light. That's why you light a torch, right? You want to see where you're going. They didn't have flashlights back then, so they had torches and they lit and they held them out in front of them as to show them the path. Light drives away darkness to allow us to see things as they really are. Jesus told a parable about this. He talked about a woman that lost a coin. And it says that she moved everything out of her house and she got a light and she began looking in the thing and she looked at every single corner because she wanted to see the room for what it was. You get that's what these eyes are when John sees them. They're not eyes of compassion. They're eyes that see everything. When Jesus walked this planet, he had the ability to see people for who they really are. The rich young ruler, he saw him. He had an unyielding heart. The woman at the well, he saw her. She was beaten down by sin in the world. Nicodemus, he saw him. He was a man asking questions, but he was actually looking for truth. So when these blazing eyes turn their focus on me and on you, the question is what does Jesus see in you? We think about this a lot. What does Jesus really see in me? What does he get out of me? I mean, because a lot of times my life is a grease fire. It's a mess. What does Jesus see when he looks underneath the covers of your life and he says, look, this is what makes you valuable to me. Because the all-seeing eyes of God were present here because I think he wants us to know I'm watching. He's walking amongst those lampstands. He's observing. And he's not just observing what I want him to see. He sees it all. Every ounce of my life, every corner, everything I thought I've got well covered up and well hidden, those things that people don't even know my deepest, darkest secrets, it's all in the light with these blazing eyes. I can hide nothing from God. And this is important to the church because those eyes attach themselves to one of the seven churches mentioned in Revelation. I'm reading Revelation chapter 2, verses 18 through 20. To the angel of the church of Thyatira write, these are the words of the Son of God, whose eyes are like blazing fire, and whose feet are like burnished bronze. I know your deeds, your love and faith, your service and perseverance, and that you are now doing more than you did at first. Nevertheless, I have this against you. You tolerate that woman Jezebel, who calls herself a prophet. By her teaching, she misleads my servants into sexual immorality and the eating of food sacrificed idols. See, these blazing eyes, they were connected to that church in Thyatira. And why is that important to us? Because I want you to see this church for what it really is. This was a good church. Jesus had lots of nice things to say about the church in Thyatira, didn't he? He said, hey, look, you're all about faith. You're all there. You're living your faith. You're doing what you think you should be doing. They were servants. Isn't that what the verse says? He commends them for how faithful in their service they were. They persevered. Man, they could take a licking and keep on ticking. They were like the Energizer Bunny. You beat them down, they get right back up, and they're back out there doing it again. So they weren't quitters. Here's the thing. They were even growing. You now are doing more than you did at first. So they were actually a growing church. And when I look at them, I'm like, yes, that's what we want. But the eyes kept looking. And it looked beyond what you could see on the outside. And began to look a little deeper. And Jesus says, you know what? We got a problem. Because those eyes didn't stop with what they wanted Jesus to see. They stopped when Jesus got all the way to the corner of their life. And when he got to the corner of their life, he says, you know what? You lack holiness and you lack wisdom. He said, they did not observe the apartness because they became tolerant. Now, I want to be careful with that word. Tolerant has kind of changed its definition in our society. Tolerant used to mean put up with. Okay? It means you don't agree with them, but you're just basically going to put your fingers in your ears and you're going to cover your mouth. You're going to hear no evil, see no evil, do no evil. And you're just going to let it happen because you just don't want to make a fuss. That's what tolerant used to mean. And I know I've read the definition. I went and looked it up. That is not the way we define tolerant today. But what Jesus is saying here is that, hey, look, you begin to tolerate things in your body that are actually dangerous to your body. You become less holy because you open the door and you begin to tolerate things that really the Bible says are wrong. God's word says it's wrong. And so they were not seeking impurity. Instead, they were allowing themselves to become sexually immoral, and idol worshippers. Now, those are important because they're both physical sins. So they were out chasing the needs for themselves, and then they began building themselves things to represent God. And that's what their life was like underneath the covers. You looked at the church, and it's all great. They're serving. They're wonderful. They're faithful. But when you looked under there, and they're like, well, you know, they're a little immoral in the way that they celebrate themselves. And they've built for themselves a few idols that really shouldn't be there. And because of this, Jesus said they were not wise. In fact, it says they were misleading. People began to connect to their church, and they wouldn't end up in a relationship with Christ. They would end up worshiping an idol. And so we want to be careful because a lot of times we see ourselves as awesome. And a lot of times we refuse to see the things that God wants us to see about our lives, the things that we need to change. Now, I don't want to be a total bummer, because guess what? Those probing eyes really did see it all. Now, I say to the rest of you at Thyatira, you who do not hold to her teaching and have not learned Satan's so-called deep secrets, I will not impose other burdens on you except for you to hold you to what to hold on to what you have until I come. So the church wasn't rotten to the core. As a matter of fact, it says, hey, look, there were many there that had not decided to do the things this lady was teaching. And to those, he just said, hold fast. He didn't say hold on, okay? You know the difference, right? If I'm holding on, that means it's moving way too fast, and I'm just hanging on for dear life. It's like, Jesus, just make sure you get back before the track runs out, because I'm holding on tight. Hold fast. That means you're going to have to get a point where you say, this is the line, and we shall go no further. Hold fast means that you are a stopping point for what is going on. Holding fast means that you are actually trying to hold the line. It's a military term. You don't want any more breaking forward into your territory. And that's what Jesus is telling them with those all-seeing eyes. Look, not all of you, but the ones who are not doing this, then you know what? You need to make a stand. It's time for you to hold fast to what you've learned. Because eventually, I shall be back to sort it all out. To the one who is victorious and does my will to the end, I will give authority over the nations. That one will rule them with an iron scepter, and will dash them to pieces like pottery. Just as I have received authority from my Father, I will also give that one the morning star. Whoever has ears, let him hear the word the Spirit says to the churches. A lot of times in churches, we think we're supposed to fix everybody's wrongs. We're supposed to hold the line. We're supposed to stand for what is pure, for what is holy, for what is good, for what is wise. But you do understand, he said, stand, not attack. He said, you guys just hold the line, because eventually I shall be back. And folks, at that day, when you see Jesus, you will see a God that sees all of you. Acts chapter 17, verses 26 through 30. From one man he made all the nations, that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out the appointed times and histories and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him. Though he is not far from any one of us, for he in him we have lived and moved and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. Therefore, since we are God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold, silver, or stone, an image made by human design and skill. In the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but now he commands all people everywhere, repent. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man he has appointed. He has given proof of that to everyone by his raising him from the dead. Folks, whether you like it or not, Jesus is exactly who he said he was. He is the great I am. He is God. And he made himself visible to each and every person. The only question is are you willing to accept him for who he is? This feels a little out of order because I finished this sermon series last week. We did Easter and we talked about Jesus Messiah. So this is going to sound a little redundant, but you got to remember, you're listening. We traveled in time. Folks, if you're here today and you've never seen Jesus for God, you have not accepted his wisdom into your life, I just want to know, what are you waiting for? What else do you need him to do to show you who he is? He came and he gave his life on the cross. He allowed himself to be crucified. They placed him in a tomb. And on the third day, he walked out of it. If that isn't God, I don't know what else there would be. He's done everything. But now he sees you. It's your turn to try to see him.